Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are getting an update from Silvercrest Metals, traded on the TSX under the symbol SIL and on the NYSE under the symbol SILV. I'm chatting with the president, Chris Ritchie. Now, Chris, let's start off by following up on a news release that came out January 4th to kick off 2021. It's a significant news release for the company because it does outline a US dollar 120 million project financing facility and a fixed price EPC contract for the construction of the processing plant. This fixed price EPC contract is for $76.5 million. Let's start off with the project financing then, Chris. This is a big deal. It really does bring the maybe necessary capital into the company to truly build this project. Give us a little bit more insight on how crucial it was to get this financing facility done.
Perfect. Thanks, Corey. Happy New Year. So, we want to start the new year off with a bang. January is a big seasonal month for gold. January and February are quite strong. We wanted to give our shareholders, the institutional holders, like a big start to the new year. The balance sheet is looking quite strong right now. If you include the debt that we just raised, plus the cash we already had on hand, we have $225 million US available to us. We're pretty much at the tag ends. There might be a small bit of additional capital required to finish off construction. But the main amount of additional growth we would have would be, or capital we would need, is just for growth. And again, the drill bit has always been a massive part of our story. So again, the pressure is off. The construction timeline starts in February 1. We can move forward with what we need right now. You know, again, really, really takes pressure off of us, which is fantastic.
Now, one thing I wanted to just get your color on, or a little bit more color on, within the highlights of this financing facility, you outline early on that the facility does not require mandatory hedging, cash sweeps, offtakes, production linked to payment, or equity issuances. What's noteworthy about this note that you've highlighted?
Yeah, it's flexibility. I mean, normally with project financing, you're really constrained with how you use the capital, the amount of capital you can access, the time in which you can access it. So for us, normally you have to have your feasibility study complete. I think it speaks to Red Kite's confidence in the project that we have more than enough buffer in order to, give us this capital prior to the completion of that study. Now, again, we are, 80-90% complete on that study right now. It is coming out in short order. So they've seen all the information. They were under confidentiality. But again, there's no warrants. There's no offtake. There's no hedging. They don't have any sort of call options embedded in that structure that go towards them. So, I mean, for us, again, it's a really attractive cost of capital. It gives us a lot of leverage to be able to move forward. And I guess everybody who's listening can only imagine that we started coming out with a financing strategy about, 5-6 months ago. We had no idea what the market was going to look like with the election, the end of the year, if gold and silver was going to be higher or lower. So the de-risking is really significant. And again, use of proceeds within that facility, they allow us to use up to $30 million for drilling and regional acquisitions. And again, we've talked about this on your show numerous times, that our feasibility study is going to be a moment in time, that we're still very much in growth mode. So again, we've just kind of crossed the Rubicon to have enough ounces and knowledge of the project to move towards cash flow. So a lot of that growth is going to be coming from hopefully internal cash flow as opposed to external. And this really, really gets us a very long way to crossing that threshold.
Yeah, the financing facility, that is a big step for any company that is progressing towards production, but then also timing it with this EPC contract that will include construction of a 1,250 ton per day processing plant. How did this timing all work out here with the financing facility and with this contract, which is just a lump sum? So you really do understand your costs here.
Yeah, and that's an important part to understand. You can imagine from our board's perspective that signing a committed contract for that sort of capital without having a really strong grasp on where the money was going to come from would be pretty tricky. So we needed to or wanted to do that in conjunction. So again, having partners that were willing to sort of acknowledge that timeline was really important and shows their willingness to work with us. And again, just for clarity, I mean, again, this, you know, agreement with Ausenco really helps us for de-risking, because they come in and they've guaranteed us a price to deliver on that process plant. If there's an overrun, they pay for it, right? So you can imagine the negotiating that went into that for all the issues related to COVID and time slippage and all of that. So to have a fixed price really should give the market clarity that, you know, capital overrun risk is quite minimal. When I say minimal, it's because we have additional costs outside of the scope that was outlined in that EPC contract. And those costs are things like building the power line or underground development, you know, or the quarantine camp, things like that, you know, and things like the underground development. We've been doing underground development for close to a year. So we know those costs, you know, they can vary from, you know, from here to there, but for the majority of the remaining capital we need, we have a very firm grasp of what that's going to be. So any mild fluctuations in and around those numbers should be very insignificant relative to our market cap and whatnot. So again, looked at in its entirety, the total capital that we need to spend and the confidence we have on that range is quite high. So again, it's a big, big de-risking event for us. And again, to do them all starting out this year, right before we start construction, really, really takes a lot of risk off for this year, and then gets the focus back on growth, you know, and that's where we can really spend our time and energy.
So, Chris, let's take a step back here, because Silvercrest really has been a leader, or the leader, when it comes to silver companies and a growth story in the silver sector. But when it comes to comparing to other companies that move through this process of de-risking a project and then financing it and then actually building it, you guys seem to be almost ahead of the curve when it comes to the financing facility and these contracts. Give us a little comparison here of when other companies typically do these transactions and how it's played a bit differently into the Silvercrest story.
Yeah, and that's an interesting topic, because, I mean, if you look at the broader market right now, we're in this huge disruption cycle where all these amazing technologies are coming out and the market is going crazy, you know, and, you know, these are usually technology sectors where it's low capital, you know, high margin and huge economies of scale. Mining is the opposite. Mining is very capital intensive upfront. And once you cross that threshold of having the capital you need, any growth you find above and beyond that has more scale. Again, depending on the commodity price, of course. So our strategy was always get into cash flow as quickly as humanly possible, be respectful of shareholders' capital. And again, management, you know, we have a lot of our own capital in this, just alongside the shareholders. So be really respectful and efficient with shareholders' capital. And then we'll find out how much growth comes after that fact with more margin and leverage. So we were racing to get to this moment, whereas sometimes other companies need to drill off the entire deposit just to get to that, you know, economic phase. So the big thing for people to understand is we've crossed that threshold very quickly. You know, the life cycle of taking a project from first drill hole to cash flow is usually much, much longer than what we're looking like we're going to be able to achieve, which means the growth that we have in front of us should hopefully be, you know, lower cost, high margin. You know, if we've already got the capital to go build the facility, again, these are all costs that have already been sunk. So again, that's been the race of hurrying up, getting to free cash flow, and then all the growth we have, you know, on a go forward base will be some incremental capital required to get there. But after that, we hope to be drilling this property off and the other property we have for years and years to come, hoping we can add, you know, many, many more years to the mine life. So again, definitely unique for people to understand that what we have today is definitely not the finish line.
All right, Chris, let's talk about growth then. You've brought it up a couple of times, and quite frankly, that has been Silvercrest's story, is continued growth, not just in the share price, but also in ounces and drilling, and quite frankly, just building value for the company. Where does growth come from here, now that you have a couple of these major milestones behind you?
Yeah, when people see the upcoming feasibility study, they're going to see what's called reserve ounces. So those are ounces that have been drilled off to a tight enough spacing to be included in this particular category. We're going to have another number of ounces that you'll see in the feasibility study that will be resource ounces. So those will be above and beyond those reserve ounces. So that means they're there. They've just got a wider spacing. So again, the confidence of having them in a mine plan is not yet high enough. So the number of ounces we'll have within that category, we hope to be low hanging fruit for us to do infill drilling on those particular ounces, and hopefully convert the appropriate percentage of those ounces. And again, you don't convert usually all of them. There might be a 50, 60, 70% conversion ratio. So again, we want to convert as many of those ounces into that reserve category as humanly possible. And again, they're there to a certain extent. We just got to prove them off. So again, far, far different than just trying to drill off a random part of the property or a new vein. So that's hopefully very substantial new ounces to be found. And it's also really important because if some of those ounces are higher grade or close to existing infrastructure, it might impact the mine plan that you'll see in the feasibility study. So again, there's chances to optimize that. If, you know, for example, Bobby Eby's display, that's some drill holes we came out with a couple months ago that were extremely high grade. Those will not be in the mine plan, but they're close to existing infrastructure. And we're going to drill those off to infill. We're going to infill drill those to reserve category. And whatever we're able to put into that reserve category, we're hopefully able to put into a mine plan in the first 1, 2, 3, 4 years and make some improvements over what people will see in that feasibility study. So that's category one. And that's hopefully what the lowest risk category. Category two would be veins we've already partially drilled, and there's still strike length in front of us where we haven't done any drilling. So they're not in the resource category even. So you step out along a vein we've had success with, and hopefully you find more ounces, and then hopefully you drill those to reserve status. And those hopefully, again, can be added to that mine plan, which will increase your NPV. The third category is the deep zone. So El Muerto is something where we just started off finding some new ounces slightly below the existing horizon. And this is a geological theory that we have that hopefully that deeper zone applies to more than just that Bobby Canora main vein. And if we do find more ounces in that horizon, it really opens up the depth potential. So again, that's a third category for us. The fourth category of growth would be just the veins we haven't touched yet. There's only going to be 21 veins of, you know, I think 47. In the feasibility study. So again, we haven't even touched half of the veins on the property yet. So again, huge running room there. Again, years to come, hopefully. And then the fifth category is Picacho. That's the new property we bought, halfway through last year, kind of ramping up there to get going. And what that might do for us, and again, it's too early to tell, but if we are successful in that property, I mean, maybe it's a standalone. Again, that's very early to suggest that, so don't take that too seriously. Maybe it's maybe it's some incremental tons and ounces that we could truck over to Las Chispas and either add to the mine life, reduce the underground development at Las Chispas by bringing over some ounces with lower cost, or maybe there's a time and place in which we would increase the throughput and add them on top of the 1250 ton today facility. Now, again, that's not a story for today, but again, we haven't been drilling for that long. And the strategy is always hustle to get to cash flow. And then a big part of this is going to be how much more can we find in the next handful of years.
So Chris, approximately how much money are you guys budgeting this year to take care of all this exploration potential that you have?
Well, and that's the beauty. I mean, we have that flexibility now. So again, we have $225 million, as I mentioned. You know, the drilling is at our discretion. I mean, I think if we had a $40 million drill budget for 2021, that would be a very aggressive drill budget to hopefully convert those resources into reserves or the appropriate percentage of those to go after the existing veins that we've had success with and just drill a long strike, test some of the depth potential, and then hopefully be really aggressive with Picacho. I mean, the main priority is going to be optimizing the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years and really making sure we can move that high grade up to the front end as much as humanly possible. And that's the stuff that will be most impactful for the NPV. Drilling beyond that scope, we'll probably save that for cash flow, because again, we want to be respectful of shareholders' capital. So I think the big point is, you know, let's be really efficient. Let's go after the lowest hanging fruit. But again, there's really big opportunity to convert a lot of ounces to the reserve category that really should give a nice little pop to the valuation. And that's always been our story too. I mean, we've never been accused of being cheap. Quite often it's been, hey, we're a little ahead of ourselves on valuation, but then we keep finding more. And then the stock price keeps going. And then, you know, hey, you're a little ahead of yourself. And then we keep finding more. So that's that kind of points to our thought process on growth and looking at how many more veins we have and just how many more areas of drilling to go after that we hope are quite accessible to us.
That's what makes Silvercrest unique though, right? Is that you guys already have, or it seems like, especially when the feasibility comes out, you're going to be showing that what you have currently, that snapshot in time, is profitable in terms of a mining operation. But you keep on outlining all these other exploration potentials that leave kind of that blue sky still on the table as you eventually get to those. But it sounds like you're going to be getting to those even after you guys are cash flowing. So it puts the company in a bit of a different world than some of these other resource plays. Chris, let's also talk macro too, because look, you guys are an established company. You have a lot of conversations with some high net worth individuals and fund managers. What are they saying and what are you hearing about the macro environment as it relates to precious metals and the silver sector in particular?
Yeah, now is a fascinating time. I don't need to say that too much, but you know, some data points I've heard that are pretty incredible. That the top one is, I heard that 21% of all of the U.S. dollars ever printed, were printed in 2020. So when we talk about this inflation trade, there's another acronym people might have heard, TINA, which is there is no alternative. So we've seen the money flow to growth stocks, you know, and there's, you know, the gold bugs, you know, tend to look at gold, but, you know, we're seeing some of this inflationary trade spread its way out. You know, can growth stocks outpace, you know, this inflation, you know, when people are playing that, you know, obviously we all know what's happening to Bitcoin right now. That's capturing fund flow, you know, so this is not necessarily stopping. And the fascinating thing about the vaccine is we either see what happens and, hey, everything's okay now, and we stop stimulus, and then, whoa, that's been an awful long time where we've had stimulus. So what happens to the market when it has to stand on its own 2 feet? That's a really big question we don't know the answer to. Or, you know, we now have the Democrats with a really, really stranglehold on, you know, the House, the Senate, and the White House. And they've been pretty vocal about, you know, spending. And you know, on the show before, we've also talked about the modern monetary theory and, you know, the desire to address, you know, education, healthcare, environmental issues by printing capital and trying to fix a lot of the ills. If we see more and more printing and we see another 21% of all U.S. dollars ever printed, it happens in 2021, we're going to get a lot more inflation. So that'll be quite interesting. And another interesting thing on the macro is, if people want to read Jeremy Grantham's recent report, you know, he's been really good historically of picking market tops. Sometimes he's picked too many tops and it's taken too long to come to fruition. But the data points alone in this piece are very, very worthwhile. And that is suggesting that deep value, you know, things trading at discount to book relative to the broader market, has never been this cheap ever. So, you know, we've got this really interesting dynamic going on that if money does start to rotate out of, you know, Tesla, you know, and Facebook and Google, where does it go? You know, and if you look at the average daily volume of Tesla, if you took about 20% of that volume, you're getting about 20% of the annual silver supply. So if you saw the silver-backed ETF capture $5-6 billion, you'd be soaking up 20% of the supply. So we don't need to see much capital rotate into, you know, silver and gold to really make a massive difference. So we're seeing inflation show up in all the other sectors, but the commodities relative to the broader market still really haven't outperformed. So we're getting dragged up with the rest of this trade, but on a relative basis, commodities are still dirt cheap. So again, like, we're starting to see some love towards the sector, but again, the capital seems to be flowing to the stuff that's already showing huge amounts of momentum. So again, a little bit of rotation would have a massive impact, and yeah, we're happy to kind of see how that plays out. So again, it's really interesting time as shown in the last few days in the market.
Yeah, man, just the start to 2021, it's showing that 2021 might be even crazier than 2020, which is really saying something. But hey, we'll see how that money rotates, because that has been the story. It's money rotating from one sector to the other. Let's wrap it up with just a quick little look ahead in terms of news that's on tap. Obviously, that feasibility, it sounds like that is coming out very shortly. What insights can you give us in terms of the news flow, especially around that feasibility?
Sure. Yep, you're correct. The feasibility study is going to come out in fairly short order. Again, it's a moment in time. So for people to take a peek at that, you can look at the valuation on an NPV at, you know, the prices we're going to use, which will be at a pretty heavy discount to spot. You can look at it at spot. Look at the free cash flow profile. You know, when you see the production profile that we have and the costs, and look at the free cash flow potential that that the project should show. And then again, on top of that, we've got those five buckets of growth that we outlined and, you know, coming to the finish line about capital. Like, again, marginal amounts of capital can give us hopefully a really big bang in terms of adding to the mine life, adding to reserves, optimizing the production profile, hopefully getting access to that new property and really showing some scale. Or if we're really, really lucky, it turns into its own property. But again, way too early to say. So a lot more drilling. You're going to see a lot more drilling, and you're going to see us, you know, moving towards production. And we do hope to be ramping up production in Q3 of 2022. So again, most mining companies take an awful long time to build their project. We're building something that's quite small with flexibility to scale. So hopefully that's going to be the case. So investors don't have long to wait to get to that cash flow story. And while you're waiting, we hope to find some more ounces.
All right, Chris, man, great chatting with you. Thank you for this update. I will post a link to that news release that outlines the project financing facility as well as that EPC contract. There is a lot of information in there, so I do recommend everyone reading over that. If anybody has any follow-up questions for Chris, please email me, fleck@kereport.com. Chris, really appreciate your time, man. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.